The Sifsei Chaim is a gorgeous set of Svarim. Chaim Friedlander is a very broad-minded Baal Machshava, a very broad-minded Talmud Chacham. It was a Mashkiach for years and years and years in the part of his yeshiva. He's a Talmud of Dessler. And in many ways, a very out-of-the-box thinker. And he has the Sifsei Chaim, his Marachas and Machshava, very nice Shtiklach and Machshava. The first three volumes, the real classics, are in the Moedim. Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. So maybe we take a somewhat shorter piece and begin it this morning. And it's in the Pesach collection, specifically, a topic that we are mamash in the middle of, that we have been working on all year long. And as you see, he opens the Pesukim that we've just been dealing with in Iyun. And he's going to give us a story. We've been very focused, B'chlal Maseches Pesachim, and specifically the last couple of days, and the sort of the technical, hopefully beautiful lamdas, but the technical aspects of the hundred the drashas, and is it a din kali, is it a din prati, is it a harchava, and so on and so forth. Let's attack it from a totally different perspective, and looking at al derech machshava, looking at chametz and matzah, and these psukim al derech machshava, trying not just understand the what but the why. Hopefully we'll add a dimension to our limud v'iyun, and will also hopefully help us to re-channel the limud v'iyun into also a mental and spiritual preparation for the Yom Tov Pesach, which is just a little more than 2 weeks away. Here we are. Ka'ochel chametz v'nichrasah nefesh ahim Yisrael. Let's start this shtickle this morning. And then we'll continue Mitzvah next week. There you go. That's the Chiyuv Kares for Achilas Chametz. It's unusually severe. There are very few things. There are only 36 Chiyuv Kares. Most of them are Arayos. A handful of them have to do with Yisuri Achila. And the Chametz of Pesach, as we spoke about at the very, very, very beginning, Tyson Daf Beis, at the beginning of the year, there are only a handful of Machalos Asuras which are Kares. And Chametz of Pesach makes the list. That's pretty striking. Barishon, and here's the pasuk that the Gemara quoted on the top of the Hamad Al. It's a pasuk in Pesachim. Also happens to be a pasuk in Chumash Vos. As an aside. Barishon barbas yom lachodesh ba'erev tochlu matos. Barishon barbas yom lachodesh. One of the places where the Chumash uses the word Rishon explicitly to mean the 14th. You have a Easter of Chametz, you have a Mitzvah of Matzah, Hashem Yisbarach Asar Alein, B'zayin Yimei HaPesach, is Achilas HaChametz, Mitzivan Olech HaMatzah. We already spoke about the top of the Hamad Al. And even in a technical sense, they're joined together. Even in a technical sense, there's a hekesh between the Yisra Achilas Chametz and the Mitzvah Achilas Matzah, and that's why they share different properties. That's why Yisra Chametz tells us what sorts of things qualify as Matzah. That's why the Yisra Chametz tells us who is obligated in eating matzah, both men and women. And that's why the Gemara said that the mitzvah of matzah tells us when the Yisrael Chametz applies. The mitzvah of matzah applies by Erev, tells me that Shivas Yamim, even though the word Yamim is used, certainly includes the night of the 15th as well. The question is, what's the deeper thematic meaning of all this? Alein is born in Mahus HaChametz V'amatzah Yishinu Mehem Yisrael Benunah. If we begin to think about this and pick this apart, we can learn a lot in terms of our own emunah, gain a lot in terms of our emunah from learning about chametz matzah and from keeping the din of chametz matzah. So he says, what is chametz? We were talking yesterday about chametz as it's matzah plus air. There's a lot of puffery. He said, let's think about it totally different. That's sort of the classic take of chametz. The chametz is gaiva. The chametz is all about fake. He says, let's take a look at chametz with a much more positive eye. We do enjoy bread as opposed to matzah. Many of us, the fluffiness definitely adds something. He says, let's think about it from a different angle. Chametz totzah shel tahalik. Chametz is the result of a process. Chimutz isa kosher bins patchus hanas. They go into the kitzonim. For dough to rise, fermentation requires the gradual development of external forces. There's there's yeast in the air, there's fungus in the air that gets into the dough and starts eating the dough. And the byproduct of the yeast is carbon dioxide. That's where you get the air bubbles from. And he goes on, over the course of time, it begins to, the yeast begins to grow, and the yeast begins to create air bubbles. And he points out, when you add, artificially add yeast in, or add a piece of sourdough in, so that jump starts the process. It can happen without it. You just leave dough to sit. There's yeast in the air, and eventually begins the chimus process. So if you're thinking, what chametz is an example of, if you go to lechem umayim, the place in Gush Etzion, is a baking a workshop. There's a bakery that does workshops. Pat de Melach. And you go to Bread and Salt, take off on the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, and they teach you how to make sourdough. How to make sourdough. Like old fashioned, the way bread was made thousands of years ago. And just three ingredients, it's basically flour, water, salt, and then you add yeast also, but the yeast was made from other dough. And they keep a little bit of the dough and they don't bake it. They use it for the next time to be the base that has a lot of yeast that's going to get the dough going. It happens to be delicious. And they tell you, part of their presentation, while you're making it and they're giving you their spiel, the part of their historical presentation, they point out that the Egyptians were the ones who were really developing fermentation technology. If you think about going back to Chumash Bereishis, Yosef is in jail with which two people? Saramashkim and the Sar HaOfen. Wine or beer and bread, both of which are fermentation processes. Why does the emperor of Mitzrayim, why does Paro have like a cabinet level minister in charge of bread? Like, okay, you gotta have someone, you gotta have a baker. Why is he a tsar? He's just a nobody in the back of the kitchen. Really, in ancient Egypt, they didn't believe in equality. They didn't believe in giving every single person his human dignity. So why were they giving so much significance to the baker and the brewer or the winemaker? So the answer that the Pat de Melach people suggest is that this was like fermentation was this like cutting edge Egyptian technology. This is a big deal. The king got to have fermented bread, chametz. The king got to have fermented drinks, beer or wine, whatever mashkim, and for the psukim it sounds like it was wine, or his dream is about the grapes. So they suggest that part of the idea of avoiding chametz is sort of like avoiding the Mitzri influence. Chametz was associated with Mitzrayim. Interesting historical take. As mentioned before, sort of the classic approach to Machshava is chametz represents gaiva, chametz represents fakery. But Rav Chaim Freeland says, let's do a third way. Chametz is the example of a process. Chametz is the product of a process. A natural process, and natural processes tend to take time. Over time, chimutz develops. As a matter of fact, right, as you get deeper into the Masechta, and we think a lot about how much time does it take. Did my focus Tanaim later in the Mishnah later in the Masechta, Seir and Siduk, and there are different stages in the process of chametz. The Mishnah speaks about Seir, which is when chimutz process has begun, and Siduk, when the chimutz process is complete, and it takes a certain amount of time. You have to leave it alone, and then over time, it happens. So chametz is an example of causality. And near the bottom of page Shin Mem Beis. Nimsa shachimutz mishaveh b'derech tivis shal siba mesovim. Chametz is a result of a natural process of cause and effect. Siba mesovim. Cause and effect. Hu mishaveh. So what does it represent? What does chametz symbolize? Hu mishamel. And semel is a symbol. Hu mishamel sanhogas hateva hamastira meha adam es a siba rishona. So chametz is an example of natural processes which serve to hide the first cause, the ultimate cause, which is Ribbono Shel'olam. And again, that's not a bad thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create the universe in a rhythmic way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have chosen to create a totally random universe, but he didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create time and space and dimensionality and physics and chemistry and mathematics. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a mathematical universe that has patterns, that has systems. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted a systematic scientific universe, and that's how he chose to design and create Olam HaZeh.
Because by design, as we discussed when we learned the first paragraph of Mesil Sejar, by design, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to not be obvious. And it's part of our, a big part of our mission is to seek to find the Ribbono Shel Olam in the universe. He's by design not right there, and it requires work to notice HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the ins and outs of life. So Chametz in the example, Chametz represents gradual process, natural causality, the sorts of things that can hide HaKadosh Baruch Hu from our eyes. Le'umas Zos, on the other hand, HaMatzah, in contrast to Chametz, Matzah mitzvah sasha teyaseh, the Nehiris HaMirbis. Matzah is supposed to be very, very rapid. It's probably as good as a stretch. It's whatever you raise a hand. Give me a hand if you've been to a matzah vision. Almost everyone, really? Okay. Almost everyone's been to matzah bakery. So even it's how many people have been to matzah bakery the last 2 years? Last year was comfortable. Last 2 years? Last 3 years? How many people have been to matzah bakery since 9th grade? Not so many. How many people have been to matzah bakery some point in elementary school? That's right. Elementary school tickets to matzah bakery. So you were young then. And it's been a couple of years. And when I get to your age, I'll understand that, you know, after a while, your memories tend to fade a little bit at your age. I get it. And also, when you're younger, you're not so attuned to all the details. It will be very different to go to a matzah bakery after having learned Maseches Pesachim. But here's the thing. Even without being attuned to all the finer details, probably one of the things that sticks in your mind the most is they hacked you about how quickly they work. And you saw it's mamish, everything, a timer. They could do sometimes several rounds of I still have a distinct memory of on the bus on the way back from our first grade matzah trip. So I got shot down by my first grade Rebbe, because he said, oh, so, okay, let's see. Who knows, how long does it take to make matzah? So I said, 18 minutes. They're like, wrong. Every 18 minutes, they shut down everything and clean and reboot. Over the course of an 18-minute session, 17-minute session, they could easily do 2, 3, sometimes 4 rounds of matzah. They're really good. They do several rounds of matzah. They're momish within a couple of minutes. From water in the flour all the way to go into the oven, it's just a few minutes. It's so rapid. So matzah is by design meant to be something made b'mehiras hamirbus, with maximum speed. He says, why is that? He says, it's not just a technical detail. What you remember from when you were elementary school, and you saw, oh, they're making matzah so quickly. That is a key point to notice. He said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants matzah to not be chametz, because, in part, because he wants us to be making it really, really rapidly. It looks almost as though it happened in a moment. So quickly, in the blink of an eye. It's, as opposed to chametz, which is a gradual process over time, matzah is, boom! One moment you have the flour and water, next thing you know, you turn around, you blink, and suddenly there's a finished matzah. Ki'ilu, it was just a point in time. Ki'ilu wasn't even an interval of time. L'mal man azman. What does that remind us of, the story? What in the story does that remind us of?
They baked matzah very quickly.
What else was very quick?
They're leaving
Mitzrayim. Ki b'chi pazan. Right. The Torah stresses the fact that we left Mitzrayim. It was ki b'chi pazan. He quotes the pasuk from Parshas Re'eh, the same pasuk that we have spent the last few days working on in Ian. I'm sorry, not the same pasuk. I take that back. Another Shivas Yamin pasuk. Shivas Yamin tochal alav matzos lechem oni. I meant to eat matzah over the course of 7 days, to eat only matzah and not chametz. The matzah is described as lechem oni. As we get closer to Pesach, we will dig into that some more. What it means that matzah has been described as lechem oni. Does that mean poor man's bread? Does that mean the bread of conversation? Gemara has different interpretations. But the Torah goes on to say, you're eating matzah, keep a chippah on your tzas and your tzitzrayim, because you left in such a hurry. On one level, it means what Shimon was saying, yeah, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, time to go. It wasn't even time to let things rise. But what was that all about? Hamatzah melamed us osanu al hanhagas Hashem hayat yeshira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at that point, when we left Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was directly, obviously, overtly managing our lives. It wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu working behind the scenes,
working under the guise of Teva.
There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu out in the open.
I want you to leave. I want you to leave right now. This moment. We're not waiting another half hour. We're not waiting another 5 minutes.
In Bli Siva Masova, Bli Hamshach Zman, there was no process. There was no extent of time. There was no cause and effect. And that direct Hanhaga of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that overt Hanhaga Nisis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was obvious. But they beat to Ibarra, top of Pesha and Gimel, the Chipazon tribe would say something. That rush, that it needs to happen this moment, not a gradual, natural things take time. Mishab Nizbonev and Ilmacha Tamina Shemis Barhu Mani Osanu. Elashish Masach Hamas Jesus.
And the point was that Kadosh Baruch Hu pulled away the curtain for a moment. And for a moment we saw that he was driving events. And the goal, as Ramban writes in the Parshas Bo, is for us to understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu was always driving events. The Matz and Chametz, again, what the picture.
The picture that Chaim Friedlander is painting, he goes on to say in the next two paragraphs that this is based on a comment of the Maharal in the Sefer Gvuras Hashem, which, if I remember correctly, is the Maharal Sefer on In Yoni Yetzias Mitzrayim and Chag HaPesach. The Maharal explains. The Maharal explains this idea that matzah is meant to be in a moment of time. Chametz is a process over time, because chametz symbolizes the way Kadosh Baruch Hu usually works. Like the Hanhaga Tivus, Kadosh Baruch Hu is working within nature, and things take time. And Kadosh Baruch Hu was like, sort of like think about Purim. Over the course of a decade, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts all the chess pieces in place, and everything works. As opposed to Pesach, so Purim, we're eating chametz. But Pesach, we're eating matzah, because Pesach is a reminder of the time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed us the Hanhaga Nisus. These are important ideas, and now he's beginning to, this is, again, as I said before, a very different take on, than the usual take on chametz as being evil. And chametz is the Yetzirah, which again, the Gemara does use that metaphor. And chametz represents gaiva and sheker and fakery. He's saying, that's true, but there's another aspect of chametz also. Chametz is process. And matzah is in the moment. Matzah is a point. Chametz is represents anhaga tivis, and matzah represents anhaga nisim. Chametz represents nisim nistarim, and matzah represents nisim guluyim. One, so this is a very important idea in Machshava, important idea is in Emuna. It's relating the practical, hands-on mitzvah objects of chametz and matzah to larger concepts of emunah. We'll pick up with this next week. Let me leave you with one epilogue, which is once we talk about process, how natural things tend to be with process, I give you a practical life tip from Stephen Covey. Mark Twain is supposed to have said that he never let. And the line is a tribute to Mark Twain and to other people. He never let school get in the way of his education. So, Stephen Covey, Seven Habits, he says, you don't usually expect to hear that as the opening of a schmooze in a school. So Stephen Covey points out, there's a lot of good things you can learn in school. There are also some unfortunate things you learn in school. I don't even mean things that are going on the side. The structure of school itself can sometimes give you misperceptions. And let's talk about one. Pesach is also the Zman Ha'aviv, it's Chodesh Ha'aviv. This is when things are starting to bud and to blossom and to grow. So if you're a farmer, let's, for simplicity's sake, let's take the farming schedule there to Yisrael. We all know when we start diving for rain and when we stop diving for rain, you come back from Sukkos after Aliyah L'Regel, and you plant your field, and over the course of the winter it rains in Eretz Yisrael, and for a while nothing's happening. Right? You're looking outside and it's raining, and you don't see anything growing. You put all the seeds in the ground and it just looks like ground. The guy next door who didn't plant his field looks the same as my field, just two muddy messes all winter long. Then, come Pesach time, things are starting to pop out of the ground. And over the course of the spring into the summer, things are really going to be growing. They'll be ready to be picked and ready to be harvested. Give all the guy next door who never planted in the fall
nothing's growing in the spring. So let's say the guy next door realizes, oh, Purim time, Gevald, I never planted. I should have planted in Cheshvan. I was asleep at the wheel. So he says, ah. You know, if I would have done it in Cheshvan, so I could have done it gradually over the course of a month, and, you know, work 8 hours a day and get it done. His nightmare is, Gevald, I only have like a week to get this done before things start growing. So he starts pulling all-nighters. He starts cramming his planting. Cramming his planting. He's hiring extra workers all day long, all night long. He's getting like an hour or two of sleep. He's just pounding the ground, pounding those seeds into the ground. Cramming his planting at the end of Chodesh Adar. What's going to happen? What's he going to grow? Will the cramming help him? Obviously, nothing's going to grow. Agriculture is a natural system. You can't just cram and rush at the last moment to expect that things are growing. Over the course of the winter, when the rain was falling on the farmer's field, things were happening underground. It wasn't nikar yet. It wasn't clear. You couldn't tell. But obviously, stuff was happening underground over the course of the winter. Those seeds were developing in a way that, come spring, the shoots can come out of the ground. You can't, farming is a natural system, you can't cram it. And sometimes school, one of the negative lessons of school, is school is an artificial system in many ways, so you can get short-term results using cramming. Loisa, of course, no one here has ever done this. Maybe some of you have a friend who knows a guy who didn't start working on the paper 2 weeks before it was due. How you talking? And the night before, it just, made it happen. And maybe some of you know a guy who has a friend who bought a dog from someone else whose older brother once didn't actually study for the test a week in advance. And the night before, or the hour before, right, found himself a book, crammed it in, and it did a pretty decent job of the test. Because in artificial systems like school, cramming can get you short-term results. In real natural systems, like farming, or like, as Stephen Covey points out, human relationships, friendships, you can't just cram. Real things, this is a different take on the observation of Reb Chaim Freelander. A teva is full of tahalichim. Nature is full of processes. When you deal with natural, real things, they tend to be processed. And they tend to be sort of things you can't just fast forward and cram. And if I've been ignoring a friend for 3 months, so you can't just like call him 3 times in one day, now we're back to normal. No, it's going to take time to rebuild a friendship. It's going to take time to rebuild a relationship. That's natural things are built, or typically are built around processes, and processes take time. And you invest time, and over time, things grow and things develop and then stuff happens. So that's a sort of a personal development, a personal management angle on this. But again, the core idea that the Reb Chaim Freelander is developing is beginning to paint a picture of thinking about chametz u'matzah as not just yetzer hara, yetzer tov, but sort of a different angle. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu inobvious and HaKadosh Baruch Hu obvious. It's a nisim, nanhaga tivis. And the nisim is starting that captured by chametz versus the hanhaga nisis, the nisim guluyim that are captured by matzah. And that's, if you wanted to, you could say, sometimes people gripe about the fact that Purim time brings so much chametz into the house. A month before, why are you bringing all these hamantash into the house and all the shalfmanas? And maybe tongue in cheek, you say, no, Purim is the yantif of chametz. Purim is all about hanhaga tivis. Purim is all about a decade, 9-10 year long process. And Kadosh Baruch Hu working behind the scenes, gradually getting us towards Gula. So that is how Purim is all about chametz, symbolically. And Pesach is hanhaga nisus, and the nisim guliyim. So for Pesach, we get rid of the chametz, and we focus on the matzah. So some thoughts to open our eyes to the fact there are whole new layers of meaning to the sugyas that we're working on and to the yontif for which we're preparing.